From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. The World Health Organization is reporting there's an upswing in diphtheria cases due to under-vaccination, and more news coming out, as you just heard in our newscast, about a worrying strain of avian flu. Dr. David Pate is joining us today to talk more about all of this. Now, remember, if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hey, Gemma.
Hey, so before we talk more about avian flu, which we really got into last week, I do want to start with diphtheria. So first off, for folks who may not be aware of what diphtheria is, can you tell us what this is?
I can, and your listeners would not be at fault for not knowing much about it, because this is a childhood disease that used to kill many, many children until we had a vaccine that became in wide use really 100 years ago. And so it has been rare to see cases of diphtheria. But as you mentioned in your lead up here, that we're seeing an increase of cases in diphtheria nationally and overseas in other countries. Fortunately, we're not seeing it here in Idaho at this point. Our last case of there's several forms of diphtheria, but the last bad case was, I think, about 1975. So that's good. What diphtheria is, it's an infection. And as I said, there's several types, but for what most people are talking about and what we're talking about with this story, it's an upper respiratory infection in the nose and throat by a bacteria. And the problem is that this bacteria can make a very bad toxin, the diphtheria toxin, and that causes a thick gray membrane to form, can form over the nostrils, it can form at the back of the throat, and it can be really difficult to remove. And in bad cases, when we have to remove it in the hospital and go in and kind of surgically remove it, it can bleed like stink. So these membranes can make it very hard for the child, or there have been adult cases, to breathe. And that's the danger, and it can kill them. It can make them very, very ill.
And Dr. Pate, I want to clarify something maybe for our listeners too about diphtheria. Is according to the World Health Organization, without vaccination, diphtheria, at least in children, can sometimes have a 30% fatality rate. And that was shocking to me, because that seems incredibly high. I'm a lay person. I am not a doctor like you, but that seems incredibly high.
It does. But, you know, it's very interesting. When my wife and I travel, she always likes to go to the very old cemeteries. And she usually is interested in early American history, but I look through and look at these early years when we had the Spanish flu, the big flu in 1819. I look at when, before we had vaccines and people, we had kids dying of measles and diphtheria and those kind of things. And if you look at the tombstones or the headstones, you will see many children that are just a couple of years old, if that, that died. And you can almost be assured many of those were infections. And we just don't realize how bad it was, because most of us that are probably listening to this radio show, like you, Gemma, I mean, you've had kids in the antibiotic and vaccine era where we can treat all these things. And so most doctors have not even seen a case of diphtheria. But certainly if you go back 100 years, this was a terrible, dreadful disease.
So the World Health Organization is citing that the pandemic is actually one of the main reasons for under vaccination with diphtheria right now, Dr. Pate. And what they were saying is that it impacted the delivery of the vaccine to so many people, and in particular children, but in particular in third world countries. So I think, you know, a lot of people might be like, well, I don't live in a third world country. I mean, why should I why should I be aware of this or care about this? But I mean, I would say, because we all travel, we're kind of a worldwide society now.
Well, that's absolutely right, Gemma. And I really think it is a multifactorial issue. I think a lot of it does surround the pandemic. Certainly, as the World Health Organization said, there were disruptions to supply chains. And so vaccine delivery may have been impaired. Some developing and poor countries may have prioritized COVID vaccines or other things to routine vaccines. But even here in the United States, certainly we see it in the UK, many other countries, we see two problems. One, a lot of people had trouble just dealing with the strain and the stress of the pandemic, work demands, taking care of their children, dealing with illness, trying to protect mm-hmm. parents, those kinds of things that a lot of times parents just didn't get kids in for the regular vaccines. It wasn't that they were opposed to it, it just didn't become the priority and things got behind, or they might have been concerned about taking their kids to a pediatrician's office where there's going to be a bunch of sick kids, those kind of things. But also, we can't dismiss the fact that the anti-vax organizations and those few physicians that have kind of gotten on that bandwagon have created tremendous doubt and challenges, not just for the COVID vaccine, but for many vaccines, and gotten parents to question the safety of vaccines. Again, this diphtheria vaccine, we've had it for 100 years now. We would know if there was a problem. We don't think twice when we give that vaccine to children or adults. It's a very safe vaccine, but there's people putting these doubts in the minds of people. So I think it's multifactorial. I think, just as you said, why do we need to worry about it? Because there are immunocompromised children, immunocompromised adults. There are now, diphtheria, we can start vaccinating at 2 months, so that's mm-hmm. different from most. But we've talked about measles, where you can go to the UK. That's not a poor or developing country. You can go to the UK and be at high risk, for, depending on where you go and when, for getting measles in a child who you intend to vaccinate, but they're not old enough yet, and then they can get seriously ill. So travel is a big concern that we have to keep in mind.
Okay, I want to turn our focus now to the avian flu. And if folks listen to our newscast at the top of the hour, you heard that there's more concern about this. Dr. Pate, you brought this to our attention last week on the program. So give us a quick recap right now, because there are some new developments as well.
Yeah, so avian influenza is different than the seasonal flu that mm-hmm. we deal with. We just had our flu epidemic. We got our flu shots, hopefully. Unfortunately, those shots will not protect us from avian flu. But the fortunate thing is avian flu, like the name sounds, it comes from birds. And it's been around for a number of years. But what we saw over the last couple of years was very disturbing. It started getting into many more mammals than usual. Typically, avian flus are spread by waterfowl, and they are spread to domestic poultry. And so people have heard about chicken farms and so forth, and then having to cull all these chickens. And probably most of the listeners experienced the fact that over the last couple of years, the price of eggs went up because mm-hmm. a lot of these chickens had to be culled, and we didn't have as good an egg supply. So we're used to this spreading in birds. It's always been a concern to us about, could it eventually get into humans? Because right now, it's not very effective at getting in humans, but it can get into humans, particularly those that are farm workers and have close contact with these animals. And the problem is, since this virus has been around, there's been slightly less than about 1,000 people infected, but the mortality rate, and realize these are probably younger, healthier people that are working on farms, has been over 50%. So it's kind of a scary proposition if it were to ever become able to transmit effectively in humans. Mm-hmm. But even in those cases, those people have not typically spread the virus to their families or other close contacts. What got our attention was on March 25th, as your news headliner said, it got into dairy cattle. We've seen isolated, sporadic cases of that over the year, but this, we had rapid dissemination among cows in, as of Friday, it was about 17 dairy farms. Now it's 20, and it gave concern that maybe this virus had changed enough, not only to be able to efficiently infect cows, but maybe to transmit from cow to cow, which we have not seen before. And so that grave concern. The good news is now we think that transmission from cow to cow is much less likely. What we're concerned about is one of two things. Either it's the milking machines that are passing it from cow to cow, because in cows, we've determined it is causing mastitis. And so when the cows are milked, there's very high levels of virus in it. And so that's one theory of how it's being transmitted. The other is there's many countries that have outlawed this practice, but the U.S. allows it. And we've got to look and see if this might be playing a role. I didn't even realize it until today, but apparently a practice is to take chicken waste and you grind that up and reprocess that, and we feed it to cows. And so one of the questions is going to be, is the virus in that chicken waste? Because chickens are one of the primary hosts. And then is that in turn infecting cows? We're not sure yet, but we are seeing a little bit of relief from that. The last point I'd make is we did get the genetic sequences from the cows, the birds, and this latest thing was we had a farm worker in Texas infected. And fortunately, that virus has not shown any of the real concerning genetic changes that we would think it is ready to rip in the human population. So that's good news for now. Things could change, but good news for now.
But my understanding, though, too, Dr. Pate, is that we're now up to more dairy farms dealing with this, and what there's and there's more states involved. But as we mentioned, I mean, in Cache County here in Idaho, this is one of the dairy farms impacted.
Yeah. And one of the concerns was, of course, waterfowl, which are the birds that typically carry this. And there are several bird species here in Idaho that we know can carry the virus. But most of these birds are migratory. So where are they? They're in the south. And now they're starting to move up here to the north. But it was a little bit alarming when we saw cases of the avian flu, as you said, in the Idaho dairy farm, in Michigan, some other northern states. We understood why the southern states, but this was a concern. Then we found out that apparently some of the cows that had been moved south for the winter also to Texas dairy farms were brought back up, and it's very possible they brought the virus with them. But of course, we are in the process right now where these birds will be leaving the south, coming back up to the north. So we're going to have to monitor this situation very carefully.
Okay. And very quickly, before I let you go, Dr. Pate, there have been some anecdotal reports of people being concerned about drinking cow's milk. And you said last week this should not be a concern. Is that still the case?
It's still the case if it's pasteurized. We strongly recommend against drinking unpasteurized milk even before this for other reasons, but now especially with this too. I think the CDC needs to do tests. Previous tests have shown that pasteurization would generally kill the virus, but there's another study that said it wasn't perfect. So, and we're not even sure if humans can be infected by drinking it, but eating, making sure that milk is pasteurized and that cheeses that you eat are pasteurized for now, until we have more information on that, that's key. But I'm not worried about, and I haven't stopped giving milk to my family members as long as it's processed and pasteurized.
Well, as always, Dr. Pate, we so appreciate you coming in and talking with us about this and keeping us up to date and informed.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. Remember, if you have any type of public health question for Dr. Pate, you can always send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we will answer those questions for you. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.